Today's program is brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
This is Chef Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, you're listening to Eat Your Words on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kathy Irway. And today, my guest is Jessica Tom. She has written the book Food Whore, a novel of dining and deceit. And now, Jessica, I have to start with the very obvious.
Okay.
Your title seems to suggest that food is like sex.
Uh-huh.
And do you think that this is, well, you, first of all, this novel takes us into a world of, you know, fine dining and sensuous, you know, delicious, visceral descriptions of food throughout.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's also a really fun, playful book. So,
thank you.
Yeah. Would you say that, like, in certain circles, perhaps food is just as, or if not more exciting than, you know, yesteryears, little fun romps?
I would say so. I forget who was the guy who it was, like, some rapper tweeted, you know, sex is okay, but have you ever had garlic bread? And I'm like, yeah, I mean, garlic bread is pretty damn good.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because I don't think those two things go together very well either.
It's true. But, you know, if you were to compare apples and oranges, if one could. So my book, it's called Food Whore, and obviously it's a very provocative title. And, you know, a lot of people have come, they interpret it in different ways. So, you know, you could take it super literally and wonder, oh, does she literally have sex for food,
right?
Which is not really the case.
Is she a foodomaniac instead of a nymphomaniac?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, when we go out to eat and when we're taking pictures, and, like, there are these really pornographic shots of, like, fudge dripping down and yolks popping and, like, these obscene milkshakes. I mean, it is super sexual. And, you know, we came up with a title. The book came out in October, and then the title just came around in January or February of that year.
Oh.
So I'd written the entire book, and then the publisher thought we needed a new title. It was originally called Bad Taste. So, you know, everyone had read it, and they thought, like, this is, like, super sexy, luscious language, even when I wasn't talking about sex. Mm-hmm. So it just came to pass, and, you know, it was a little hard to swallow in the beginning.
Right.
But
your
parents
might have been a little bit.
Actually, my parents are really pragmatic about it. Okay. They're like, whatever makes you a millionaire. I'm like, okay, well, I'm not sure this can make me a millionaire, but whatever, you know.
Well, I have to say, I love the title. When I saw it, I got the character, and I think you really coined something there. And I mean, for anyone who is obsessed with food, you know, it's impossible not to love this book and to love the character.
Thank you.
And everything portrayed in that. So I think that, you know, taking us on this tour of just luxurious food and decadent food is, it's just fun in that same sinful way that, you know, one might read an erotica novel. So it's, yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely an element of fantasy in there. So not only is she able, you know, since she's the ghostwriter of this chef, of a critic who's lost a sense of taste, you know, there is this fantastical element that she's going to all of these 4-star restaurants. And then, you know, in this scenario, she has an expense account at Bergdorf Goodman.
Mm-hmm.
I had a lot of fun sort of thinking to the limit of, like, what an amazing New York life would be.
Right.
And in my mind, that's, like, restaurants and expense account at Bergdorf.
Yeah, because there's many elements in this book where your heroine has, you know, basic similarities to your life. So, For one, you wrote the restaurant reviews in your college newspaper. Check. Mm-hmm. She did that.
Yeah.
And then she interned for a famous food writer. Check.
Okay, yeah.
And
yeah.
You did that for Zagat, correct?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I worked in corporate marketing, so I wouldn't say
okay,
it was like
a little
exactly,
different.
Yeah, yeah. But I did definitely get exposure to the editorial side. And then Tim Zagat did take the interns out a bunch.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So this is kind of like a more fantastical version of your life? Or
yeah, maybe. I mean, you know, like my main character, I was a girl who moved to New York, who loved to eat out, who wanted to get into the food industry. Mm-hmm. You know, I obviously didn't get into a lot of the scenarios that she did. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Tia's 23.
Okay.
And I'm quite a bit older than that now. So, but we're, you know, we're different people in terms of maturity, in terms of what we've gone through. But a lot of the emotional things that she goes through, mm-hmm. you know, when she's feeling insecure, or she's humiliated, or she sees something, or she feels that her life is opened up in ways that excite her. Mm-hmm. Those are things that happened to me, and I think happened to a lot of people.
Sure, coming of age, you mm-hmm. could say, in New York City.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned that you're inspired by reading a lot of like chef memoirs,
mm-hmm.
and wishing that there was a little bit more drama
yeah.
in them.
Yeah.
So, but I'm curious though. Do you see like I think I've seen observed you know several kind of foodie lit books come out. Do you think that's like a growing genre? And is there anything that you were inspired by in this genre?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think foodie-ism has expanded in so many different yeah. directions. So whether it's, you know, at one point it used to be, okay, so you write for a magazine, you write for a blog, mm. you're a photographer or something. But now, you know, who knows, you know, you could be doing crazy jobs that, like, never existed 10 mm-hmm. years ago. And so in that respect, I do think foodie lit is on the rise because they're just, like, more foodie/everything.
Right. That's true.
But, yeah, I mean,
we're on a foodie podcast station right now. So
right. Yeah. In terms of foodie lit, I do read a lot of those chef memoirs, a lot of, like, waiter tell-alls. Mm-hmm. In terms of foodie lit, I do read a good amount of foodie lit, but with Food Whore, I wanted to do something that was really, that was different. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I read, you know, Eater and Grub Street, and I like to follow that as if they were sports pages, you know. And mm-hmm. so I wanted to write a novel that captured some of that hype mm-hmm. and like this sort of restaurant obsession in New York. And you know that might exist in other books, but I haven't experienced them, so that's the book that I wanted to write.
That's a really interesting insight because those, you know, who doesn't love to read a really great descriptive, you know, review in Eater of, you know, like some excitingly new concept or dish or something like that. And it's so accessible, too. So mm-hmm. it kind of makes, like, the whole read just familiar at once. But how hard was it though to write, since, you know, coming off of you know, writing actual food journalism, how hard was it to switch mm-hmm. you know, switch lanes into fiction?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I would say I'm more, well, yeah, so I, you know, I do nonfiction, and I also, like, in my prior corporate career life, I worked mm-hmm. in marketing. Yeah. So I do, you know, writing, I'm not too precious about it. So I can just, you know, you have a deadline and you're writing copy and you mm-hmm. have a goal and you use words to achieve that goal, you know? So with fiction, I come at it as a job. So even when I had my full-time job, I had quotas every day to write.
Mm-hmm.
And so I looked at it like, you know, it's definitely more creative than writing marketing copy.
Sure.
But I had that same sort of discipline.
Cool.
And then also, too, I studied creative writing in college, mm-hmm. and I read a lot. So, And for me, you know, since I'm consuming all of this like food media all the time, right. it was just a matter of like taking that and reforming it and recontextualizing it in my story.
Sure. Did you know what the ending would be like before you started? Or
I thought I did. Yeah. I outlined it out and then it ended up changing. Endings are hard. Yeah. Endings are hard. And, you know, you never really, you know, you want it to be a surprise, but like not totally out of left field.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, different people have different ideas of whether you want everything to come in so it's like tied up in a neat little bow, right. or do you want it like a little bit more open ended? Mm-hmm. So it took some time, but you know, I have a really great team.
Cool. So, you know, we don't want to give away the ending, but one of the major, I guess, components of this plot is that Tia, the heroine, she ends up writing a lot of the reviews for this famed New York Times restaurant critic, mm-hmm. who loses his palate.
Yeah.
So was this based on the idea of one losing their palate, based on any true experience or like stories?
Yeah, well, a little bit. So I have a friend who has a friend, and she doesn't have a sense of taste. And so my friend was telling me that...
Like, at all?
No.
Like,
well, just a tiny bit. And so she eats a lot of, like, fried chicken and, like, really... And, like, she, like, pours hot sauce and everything.
Because she's so immune to, like, flavor, she needs...
Exactly.
To,
yeah. Wow. And the fried chicken is just, I mean, it's super flavorful, but it's also, like, really textured. So I was really fascinated.
Because if somebody didn't have a palate, don't you think they would just eat like granola? And, like, just...
Yeah, that's why I think that maybe she had like 10%, 15%.
Okay, got it. She needs something to whack her palate. Like.
yeah, right. So that intrigued me, and then I looked more into it, and then I heard of like, you know, more people. There, of course, Grant Achatz, who lost his yeah, mm-hmm. and then there's another food writer named Marlena Spieler. She's a food writer. Right. And she was in a car accident and lost her sense of taste.
Oh my goodness.
And so that, you know, that intrigued that. I'm like, that's a story.
Yeah.
Or, you know, part of a story.
And that must be such a strange position. Like, I don't know much about the real life stories and how they felt and how they coped with it.
Mm-hmm.
But your character here of the New York Times critics, he keeps it sort of a secret.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
It's a total like taboo, and then, you know, kind of goes around and deviously covers up for it.
Yeah. But, it's one of those what if things. Mm-hmm, like, what mm-hmm. if you lost your sense of taste? And then what if you were also the New York Times restaurant right. critic? So, you know, I had a lot of fun building, you know, creating a book that was like, it immediately grabs your attention, mm-hmm. because it's obviously not a good scenario, and you want to see what happens.
And everybody can, you know, have a different take on that. So what would you do if you lost your palate tomorrow?
Oi.
Cry.
And I didn't have it for the rest of my life. Yeah, that would, I mean, food means a lot to me, and it's like a really big part of my life. So, you know, if I lost it forever, I don't know. Maybe I would try to like attach myself to some other part of food. I would be into like food styling or something, or like I would write even more to sort of taste it in my mind.
Mm.
Or, you know, maybe Beethoven, I would find something else.
Beethoven style, right?
yeah, I'd be like, I've become like a master chef. yeah, or maybe I would find something to replace it. I don't mm-hmm. know what that would be, but.
Well, it could be sex. I'm just saying.
Yeah. You don't know my erotica pen name. Very popular.
No, but Jessica, so food is really important to you. Do you think people are born with this? Were you always this way?
I was, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, like, I come from a family that's obsessed with food.
Yep.
You know, so my dad was born in China, but my mother was born in Madagascar. Mm-hmm. And so Isla had a lot of food influences growing up, you know, Chinese. Yeah. French, Malagasy. I have my mother's side of the family. They pretty much all live in Montreal.
Oh,
so
yum.
It's kind of like an odd mix. Like when we go for dinner, you know, it'll be like foie gras and bok choy, and then like venison. And my uncle, when he went hunting. So yes, and like my dad is the cook of the family, and he's like very He likes to tinker with a lot of things. Okay. So yeah. Growing up, he was like, I'm really into like pâté au choux, or like I want to make like marron glacé, or I want to smoke meat or something. And so like he always had a project. And so and I helped him, you know, and I was watching PBS shows with him, and we always had a ton of cookbooks in the house. And, you know, food is sort of is the way that they show love.
Right.
So, but, you know, now I think there you hear a lot of stories where people didn't grow up with great food growing up.
And then they, like, totally took a deep dive into it later in life.
Yeah. So I can go both ways.
Yeah, but there is something to say about being exposed to such a range of foods. It's pretty cool.
To
ground that. We are going to talk much more about this book after a quick little commercial interlude.
The following program was brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
Hey, we're back chatting more with Jessica Tom, author of Food Whore, a novel of dining and deceit.
Hello.
So I have to ask this question. Through Tia's delightful story, you know, the reader is taken on this tour of, you know, this, I guess, the high fashion world of food, you know, through this unlikely connections that she stumbles upon. And she's, you know, given really, really exclusive access to the best foods and the most magical foods and the best chefs today. And, you know, it's something that we would all love to connect with, but I feel that it is hard to for many readers perhaps to relate with. So how do you find, like, how do you make this relevant to all kinds of readers?
Sure.
How is high fashion food?
I mean, I'm definitely aware that a book that is really entrenched in New York City and, you know, is about ambition and, like,
status.
And fame and exactly. That's not going to appeal to everyone.
Sure.
They'll be like, ugh, like, I don't care at all about getting into that restaurant.
Circle.
Or,
okay.
Yeah. You know, but at the same time, this book doesn't need to appeal to everyone. Mm-hmm. It just needs to appeal to, you know, my target audience, and I want to write a book that I want to write. And so, yeah, I mean, while that was in the back of my head, I also knew that, like, hey, this is my vision, and, you know, this, I don't necessarily need to reach, you know, middle America, although I think lots of people in middle America might be intrigued by this, like, look into crazy New Yorker neuroses. Yeah.
Well, you definitely do capture this time and place, and, you know, New York City seems to be such a vivid character in the book itself. So were a lot of, like, the restaurants visited based on the actual, like, right now, right here, like the happening restaurants and chefs?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, so I started writing this book in 2009. So, like, the restaurants that were hot then aren't necessarily the restaurants that are hot now.
Interesting. Okay.
So Tia, she interns at a restaurant called Madison Park Tavern, and that's not that hard to decode, you know.
Is it 11 Madison Park?
Yeah. 11 Madison Park meets Gramercy Tavern and meets also another restaurant in New Haven called the Union League Cafe, but no one would ever guess that.
Okay. All
right. But that's only because cool. I spent a lot of time there in college. And Bakushan is based on, like, early hype Momofuku.
Nice. Yep.
And then, of course, Le Breton is kind of like Le Bernardin.
Ah.
So, yeah. But, you know, a lot of the dishes and the personalities of the chefs, those are just, I mean, they weren't really necessarily based on anyone. It was mm-hmm. just sort of me, you know, absorbing all of this food and restaurant gossip mm-hmm. and then coming like up with something.
These are like the archetypes of the restaurants. Yeah.
Yeah. And then trying to mix it up a little too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Tia falls for this chef named Pascal, and he's not like a super conceited, like, I mean, you know, he's a smart guy, but I, you know, tried to make him more nuanced than like a Gordon Ramsay or, mm-hmm. you know.
That would be hard to fall for him.
Yeah, right.
So it's interesting that you say, like, times have a little, you know, shifted a little bit from 2009. Where do you think, you know, the hottest trends in fine dining are going right now for mm-hmm. New York?
Yeah, I mean, if fine dining is around here to stay, you know,
right. Because, well, there's that.
Yeah, so, you know, you see a lot of restaurants on the top that are trying to become more casual, or a lot of, like, fine dining restaurateurs want to go with their fast casual concepts.
Sure. Momofuku, for instance.
Exactly.
You know, the chicken sandwich.
Yeah. And the 11 Madison Park team have their Make It Nice chain. It's fast casual.
Okay.
So, so, yeah, I mean, I think, like, overall, food has been democratized. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you don't have to go to a 4-star restaurant to get an amazing experience. You know, you could just go, you can go to this, like, hole in the wall in Flushing. And so, you know, the hierarchy is not so clear cut mm-hmm. anymore.
It's redefining, like, what's good food, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah, yeah.
And worthy of excitement and buzz.
Mm-hmm.
That's so cool. Okay, so I know that you got an option for this book.
Yeah.
To become a movie.
Yeah.
So that's really exciting. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Who is going to play you?
Oh, or Tia.
Tia, fine. Okay.
Yeah, so it was no, not yet. I wish. It was optioned by DreamWorks.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually knew about this before the book came out.
Oh, cool.
But it just, like, took a lot of time for blah blah blah. You know, I have an idea. I try not to
of who
talk
you want?
Of who I want as a main character. Yeah. I try not to say it because I feel like
okay.
I don't really I mean I definitely know movies and mm-hmm. but I don't necessarily know, like, what's the smartest in terms of, like, attaching star power, da da da.
Yeah.
So I have an idea, but it's, like, totally outside, like, not thinking about the commerciality of a movie. I'm just like, oh, she has the right look.
Right.
But I think there are other important things at play.
Well, okay, so your book has been compared to The Devil Wears Prada, or, like, it's sort of like The Devil Wears Prada to food,
yeah.
as that was to fashion.
Yeah.
So do you think that Anne Hathaway would be a good candidate?
I've heard that. Anne Hathaway is I love Anne Hathaway, but, mm-hmm. well, my main character is, she's 23 years old, so maybe she's a little...
Okay, over the head.
Well, I would say, no, she's still great, and, like, I hope she has many, many roles ahead of her. I don't want to be, like, one of those, like, Hollywood, like, you're 35, applause, you're over, like, the hill.
Career's over. Sorry, Anne Hathaway.
But I would love, I mean, I think it'd be really cool to have a star that's, like, kind of unknown on the way up and
rising star.
Yeah, exactly.
Can't wait to see. I'm gonna make some guesses too. Is this Tia's story over, or are we gonna see her again in a sequel?
So originally we didn't think that it would have a book two, a mm-hmm. sequel, but I've been hearing from readers that they're interested, and I did actually leave it a little open-ended.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I mean, I'm working on my second book now, and it's not a sequel. Mm-hmm. But if it comes to pass where people, you know...
But it's a novel, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. If people start saying, we really want to hear what happens to these characters, then maybe I might do it. But I don't have an idea at the top of my head. And I don't want it to be like a lame sequel that's like obviously like extracted out of something that like couldn't, that it wasn't meant to be.
That's really fair and you know, bold of you to do. And also, if you have a new novel anyway in the works, then
yeah, that's
congrats.
True. Well, the second book will still be about food. So I think, you know, a lot of what people liked about the book, the first book, will definitely be in the second book too.
So new, fresh cast.
Yes, exactly.
And deceit.
I'm really drawn to deceit. It's like, I'm like, here's another man deceiving a woman, or like, here's another, or I don't know. I guess it's a running theme in my head. It's like a
like the young kind of like the young plucky assistant rises against the establishment or something. That's fun. So I love that you mentioned that, you know, you've worked well as a food writer, but you've also worked in restaurants. Do you think that's really important to give perspective into this industry, to like kind of having been on both sides of
I think it would be really hard to have written a book that rang true to industry people if I didn't have that experience.
Yeah.
It's probably you know, people write books all the time about like the Civil War. Like, obviously you were in the Civil War. So it's like definitely possible.
Sure.
But you know, I'm writing a contemporary novel about the restaurant industry and like, you know, these people, I want to do them justice.
Right.
So,
Oh, I see. So did you like work in the restaurant industry as sort of research for this book, or did
I always had that in the back of my head?
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So I was always trying to get into like, to touch food in some way because, you know, I started this book a while ago, 6 years ago. And so in the back of my head, I was always thinking like, you know, I want to build experience that will feed into my book.
Well, it definitely, I think it's a great, you know, mission, and to give you that perspective into just food, you know, what it takes to make the industry of food run too.
So also, yeah. And to understand, you know, the nuances, front of house, back of house. And, you know, even though this is told from the point of view of Tia, who, you know, is an outsider, she's a critic, I wanted to portray a restaurant and what happens there in a way that rang true.
Yeah, and you really just capture this time and place, and I think it's so much fun.
Thank you.
So I have to ask, of course, the food whore, what is the sexiest meal in the world, in your opinion?
Oh, gosh. Sexiest meal in the world. The food whore. Let's see. I love, you know, like maybe like you're on the beach and you just caught some like fresh fish and you grill it and like you have this fresh air and the ocean and the sand and like the aroma from the fish and like the vegetables and like you're eating with your hands and you have some wine and you have like some tropical fruit.
Sounds delicious. Fish, grilled vegetables.
Yeah, and like the atmosphere, and like it's very tactile and very, you know, nothing too fussy, no like, you know, butter sauces or anything. It's like like elemental.
Get that primal.
Yeah, exactly. Stuff. Right. Yeah.
I love it. You can tell you're a writer because you just like set a scene instead of told me like, I don't know, some like food.
Right. Oysters and molten chocolate
cake.
Well,
it has to be on the beach, a little breeze. You have to be with somebody special.
Yeah.
No, really, this is so much fun, and I can't wait to share it with more folks because, you know, this is just the kind of book that you eat up, literally, and I hope many people get to try it. And also, I love how in the back you coin food whore, noun, a person who will do anything for food. you really summed up a generation here, I think.
Thank you. I tried.
So best of luck to you, Jessica, and that's about all the time we have for today.
Yay. Well, thanks. Thank you so much for having me. This is super fun.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining. And thanks everyone at Heritage. We'll see you next week on Eat Your Words.
Yeah. Ooh, I I like the way you do. Whoa, the way you took it so slow.
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.